This is Fresh Tracks Weekly. So this week we're talking about how there is a potential threat to the public's ownership of fish and wildlife as the Georgia legislature passed a bill that stripped language from a law that had to do with the public trust doctrine. Before that, here's some headlines we found interesting this week. We're going to start off with some pretty fun news. In Alaska, the governor recently announced new appointments to the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game. And when you scroll down to the Board of Game, we see a familiar name, Jim Baichtal. Pretty cool to see Jim get appointed, and it's reassuring to see someone who has a deep understanding of the issues, who has been trained and understands the science, along with years of real-world hunting experience in the state. Congrats, Jim. Looking forward to seeing your contributions to the Alaska Game Board. A study in Michigan has been trying to figure out if they can vaccinate wild deer for bovine tuberculosis via an edible bait. Bovine tuberculosis is a disease that can affect both humans and animals and is found in both deer and cattle in certain regions in Michigan. While the state has been fairly effective at curbing the effects of the disease in captive deer herds and cattle over the last 30 years, it's still prevalent in wild deer populations. They've tested the bait vaccines with captive deer and found that it can indeed work, but just recently they've taken the test to the field to see if it'll work with wild deer. The vaccines are liquid capsules that are surrounded with shredded alfalfa and molasses to form a cube that they're placing in crop fields. The initial test consists of 15 different sites where they have cameras monitoring these vaccine baits. After a couple weeks, the researchers will go out, kill a subset of those deer, and take tissue samples to see if the vaccines were effective. It'll be interesting to see how well this works, and if it does work well, to see if it leads to similar methods being used to control other diseases. In Grand Teton National Park, it was reported that the removal of mountain goats has continued, with 15 additional goats being killed in 2023, and they estimate around 10 to 20 goats still remain alive in the Teton Range. Back in 2020, Grand Teton National Park started the controversial removal of mountain goats within the park using a helicopter crew, along with subsequent volunteer hunters. I believe they killed around 100 goats the first 2 years. Mountain goats are not native to the Teton Range, and evidence showed that they could be having a negative effect on the native bighorn sheep. There's no mention if they're going to continue to try to kill the remaining goats in 2024, but it was noted that a total removal may not be possible, especially when additional goats can continue to migrate in from surrounding areas. A dairy worker in Texas recently contracted the bird flu, making him the second person in the United States to be reported. Last year, we talked about the outbreaks of the bird flu across the United States and how it was being detected in more and more species. That list was expanded to dairy cows last week, which is what led to the infection of that dairy worker. Luckily for him, the only symptom was eye redness, but there has been 15 cases reported in humans in Asia, with 8 of those resulting in death. So far, it seems that human-to-human transmission is extremely unlikely, but there's always room for mutations, so who's ready for another pandemic? In Wyoming, a man has been accused of running down a wolf with a snowmobile, catching it while still alive, taping its mouth shut, bringing it home with him, and then taking it to a bar before eventually killing it. In the area the wolf was caught, they are classified as a predator, and it is legal to use snowmobiles to pursue and kill them. However, the act of keeping it alive and torturing it? Gotta say, not cool. It's also not a great idea for keeping a positive image of hunting in the public eye. The individual was cited for transportation of live wildlife and fined $250. Incidents like this are likely going to be fuel for animal rights groups who would love to shut hunting down. The first large-scale wildlife overpass in Idaho was finished last year, and the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership put out an article detailing the project and initial success. The crossing structure was built over Highway 21 along a migration route where mule deer and elk cross twice annually to reach their winter range on the Boise River Wildlife Management Area and surrounding areas. The project was completed last November, and trail cameras have already shown mule deer using it. Transportation officials are estimating that wildlife vehicle collisions could be reduced by up to 80% once animals become used to using the structure. Previous studies have shown that in order to be successful, these crossing structures have to be substantial in width to convince wildlife to use them. This makes these projects very expensive. That being said, more and more organizations are getting on board, not only for the benefits to the wildlife, but also to public safety by reducing wildlife vehicle collisions. They end up being a win-win for everyone. With that, we are jumping into our deeper dive where we are talking about some recent legislation in Georgia and the effect that it could have on the public trust doctrine. For the deeper dive this week, we're switching gears a little bit, talking about something in the South.
Yeah.
Georgia.
Yeah. That's
stream access laws and the public trust doctrine.
Yeah. So. Usually we don't get that stuff out of the South or even the East. Most of this stuff ends up being in the West, but.
Yeah. And I feel like
I'm a little out of the loop in a lot of the stuff going on in the South. So it's kind of been a learning experience for me.
Yeah.
So might not get everything 100% accurate, but I think a lot of these things could apply to other states. I mean, the public trust is something that's part of the North American model, and that we as hunters, especially public land hunters, are very attached to the public trust doctrine. So some of the things that we could learn here could very well apply to many other states.
They will.
Yeah.
And what's happening in Georgia is it's not unique to Georgia. It's happening in other states and in state legislatures. It's happening in courthouses. So people want to be paying attention to this stuff.
Yeah. And what happened in Georgia was that they recently passed a bill, and it hasn't been signed yet by the governor, but it sounds like it probably will be. It's passed out of the legislature.
Yeah.
That stripped some of the public trust doctrine language from a fishing access bill from last year. So this bill was passed last year, and then they went in and basically took out the language that had to do with the public trust doctrine.
Right.
And I guess to put it into context, we kind of have to do a little bit of a history.
Yeah.
History lesson. So,
In Georgia, like some of the other southern states, I'm sure if there's a Georgia attorney listening, they're going to correct me in this. This is an accountant doing his best to interpret what an attorney told me.
Okay.
So back in the early 1800s, there was an effort to remove the Cherokee, the Cree, the Chickasaw, all those from their native lands. Those places where those were, they called them the five civilized tribes, whether, you know, the language of the time and the vernacular of the time being what it was. But there was an effort that ended up being a successful effort to remove, in Georgia anyhow, the Cherokee and the Cree from those lands under the Indian Removal Act of 1830. And when that happened, the Georgia government said, well, here, you can have all this land. And so they started giving out land grants. Well, there were changes to things about navigability and the public right to waterways and stuff. I think it was in the 1860s.
1863.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And so land grants after that were subject to these changes that happened in the 1860s. Well, there are landowners today who say, no, my land grant goes back to when the state of Georgia gave these to, you know, citizens, white males, as part of the Indian Removal Act of 1830. So my rights precede the change that happened in the 1860s.
And basically, they said that they have ownership over the stream beds, which was...
And so they're also making the interpretation that comes with that is I have ownership of the fishing.
Yeah.
And the use of that water. Yeah. As it is it to the midstream of the river or creek, as long as it's adjacent to my private property bank boundary.
Yeah. And some of that culminated a few years ago where there was a lawsuit where it apparently ended in some gunfire.
Yeah.
No one got hurt, luckily. But apparently, so this is a hotly contested issue over landowner and anglers.
Right.
And the landowner won that case, I believe. But then there was a lot of dispute between the hunting and angling community and landowners. And that was what prompted the legislation last year,
2023, a bill passed that said, look, navigable streams, we're going to allow people to use those for hunting and fishing, and something to the effect of this doesn't create any adverse claim against ownership of the stream bed by an adjacent landowner. And it kind of incorporated language that referred to the public trust doctrine, which tenet number one of the North American model as accumulated by John Organ, Val Geist, and Shane Mahoney is that wildlife is a public trust resource to be held in trust and as a public trust asset.
Right.
So the reason this is important, regardless of where you live, is there is a lot of attack right now, legislatively, in the courts, not by the judges, but by people taking cases to court, to punch holes in the public trust doctrine. The public trust doctrine does not apply to wildlife. Or they want to narrow it and confine it to a point that it's pretty much null and void.
Right. So, and if you're unaware, that's like one of the core principles of the North American model that, you know.
Right.
One of the main reasons that we have public wildlife and the amazing opportunities that we have, it's unique to North America and especially to the United States is because of this idea, the public trust doctrine that the states follow.
Right.
Largely. I mean,
and the
vast majority of states try to, but again, it's like, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah. And the reason that is the case in the United States goes back to 1842. There's a case, Martin versus Waddell, where a landowner tried to make a similar claim, but it related to, if I remember right, the tide flats. And people were out there, I don't know, getting seafood, you know, shellfish or clams or something. And he laid claim to the tide flats and all the wild things on the tide flat. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, you don't own that. Your land grant was severed. When the United States, because this person made the same claim that my land grant from the King of England granted me the fishing, the hawking, the fowlings. They had some weird kind of way of saying the hunting and fishing. And the court said, no, that was severed when the United States became its own sovereign nation. And therefore, we hold that these assets, because then they went back to how the U.S. Constitution was formed, that these assets that are mobile and don't stay attached to the land like a tree does, these shall be held in trust for the public, for the citizens of that state. And they went back and in that case, they referred to the public trust doctrines going back way, way back in time.
Yeah.
And it's a principle of common law that came forward. And so here we are, 2023, Georgia confirms that. Everybody got excited last year when Georgia confirmed that.
Right.
And codified in their statute. Wow. Public trust doctrine is going to apply to our navigable streams. And it specifically said for the purposes of hunting and fishing, it's like, whoa, this is like progress.
Yeah.
Well, now there's some of the stuff that you read in researching all this is you find out how many other land claims precede the change in 1860 or 63 or whatever and go back to land grants that were given as part of the Indian Removal Act of 1830. There are miles and miles and miles and miles of river in Georgia.
Right. Yeah, I saw that there was a statement from, I think it was someone from the Georgia Wildlife Federation that was basically like, this is setting up a playbook for other landowners to basically go out and claim their own private fishing spots.
Yeah, and so reading some of the articles around this, it's a pretty big deal down in Georgia. I didn't realize it was such a boiling pot down there until we started looking into it.
Yeah, and apparently it was like the one of the initial places that prompted the fight was over some like extremely popular, it was like the shoal bass or something.
Yeah.
And so like these...
Yeah, and so the...
sweet bass fishing and then, anyway.
Yeah, one spokesperson for that family is quoted as saying, I don't care if they float through here, they're just not fishing here. And I think that was part of the family where some gunshots happened or something.
Yeah.
But anyhow, this then rolls forward where right now there's a bill on the governor's desk in Georgia. And it takes the prior bill and it strikes this language. This is all struck out. They want to get rid of Georgia as a sovereign, is trustee of its people's rights to use and enjoy all navigable streams capable for use for fishing, hunting, passage, navigation, commerce, and transportation pursuant to the common law public trust doctrine. It wants to get rid of that. So it's striking that, and then it says, and this is... And it's kind of interesting then that they're like, well, we want to get rid of the public trust doctrine, but then they want to add this. The assembly, the Georgia legislature, further finds that by the common law, the citizens of this state have an inherent right for the use of passage and for hunting and fishing all navigable streams from the low water mark to the low water mark.
So, yeah, that's interesting.
And then they also add this last bit. But in such cases, the public's right is limited to only using such navigable streams for passage and for hunting and fishing. So it gets rid of anything in this legislation that talked about the public trust doctrine. And it's defining a little tighter where the public's navigability is between the low water mark and low water mark. And then it says, nothing contained in this subsection shall be construed to permit entry upon privately owned property adjacent to the navigable streams. So it creates a whole lot of things. What is a navigable stream?
Yeah, which it sounds it's not strongly defined in Georgia. It sounded, from what I could tell, which is the case in a lot of states too.
Right. But. And so there's a whole, it's like, this is a snowball with like 12 arms sticking out of it. And it's trying to remove any reference to the public trust doctrine. It doesn't address or solve these land claim issues that are being made or
which was one of the main reasons that this original bill was brought up in the first place. And I think that's the question that's on everybody's mind is what's going to happen when these people with these land grants prior to 1863 come through and want to try to, you know, follow the playbook of that previous landowner. And I think, and that's the part where I'm confused, and I maybe you have a better understanding of this. Like, what is the future of that?
Yeah.
Does this amendment or this new bill that's changing last year's legislation change how that's going to work in the future?
Nobody seems to have the answer to that.
Gotcha.
The attorney I talked to. But here's why it's so important across the country. New Mexico just went through the entire New Mexico Supreme Court process last year. It was ruled that the public has the right to their streams. There is no private ownership of streams in New Mexico after that. Even though we still have landowners who, if you try to float through, they'll call the sheriff or call the game warden or, tell you to get out of here. Montana is kind of considered to be the gold standard of the public trust doctrine use for stream access. Our stream access law, everybody holds it up as the thing. Well, that was litigated by Jim Getz and the Getz Law Firm here in Bozeman. Mm-hmm. And I've hired them before for things to tell me, educate me about this stuff. And they're really, really smart about these things. And the argument was made that upon statehood, Montana, our constitution, and they always go back to what the constitution of that state or the U.S. constitution says, and I'm not smart enough to say it all, but you can go back and say that through that they established the principle that these things shall be held in trust for the public.
Right.
So you start getting into these places where people say, no, I want to lay claim to the fishing here. The public trust doctrine does not apply for the fishing in my half of the river, on my half of the midpoint of the river, from my property boundary upstream to downstream.
Right.
You don't own the fishing there.
Well, and
I do.
And so I need to re-up some of my knowledge on various states, but that is the case in some states, right? I know Colorado, you can't step, you can float through, fish, but you can't
touch, drop anchor, you can't jump out, you can't anything. So.
Right.
This is where property law, like defined terrestrial property law, I don't know if conflict is the right word, but intersects with law about transient assets. Water is a transient asset.
Right.
So it's often deemed to be of a public trust type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wildlife does not stand in one place or respect boundaries. That's why it's always been deemed to be a public trust asset that no matter where it stands, we're just going to say the state is the trustee of that fish or that wildlife.
Right.
So if you have cases like this and then you have legislatures and governors going to bat for the interests who want to privatize this, it's like, whoa, wait a second. Where does this stop?
Yeah. Well, and that's actually an interesting thing to bring it back to Georgia. Like, I read the statement from when Governor Kemp had signed this, you know, this bill last year. So right. The one that
everyone celebrated.
Yeah, the hunters and anglers especially celebrated because it gave them rights to the streams and, or, you know, like had that public trust doctrine language in it. And he was saying, basically implying that everyone, the vast majority of people were in support of this and proud to sign it. But now it sounds like he's going to sign the new bill that's taking that public trust stuff out of it. And so it's obviously that, or it's obvious that he can be influenced from whatever groups that are pushing, you know,
yeah,
to go one way or the other. And it's not like this bill is completely being stricken, I guess. I think that's right. The one that's interesting to me, and that's where I'm confused, is trying to understand exactly what's going to happen. And I think the future, we won't know until the future, but it definitely feels concerning that they're taking that language out of there. But.
Yeah, and here's the caution or the flashing red light that our audience should be thinking about. Our ability to be public hunters and public anglers is predicated and based upon the public trust doctrine.
Yeah.
It says that the wildlife is not owned by any individual, whether fish, birds, you know, elk, deer, or whatever. It is held in trust for the public, the citizens of that state.
Yeah.
Well, when we start having groups, then there are groups out there that absolutely hate the public trust doctrine. They hold conferences on the flaw and folly of the public trust doctrine.
They should move back to Europe.
There you go. That's, you know, they don't have wildlife under a public trust principle in Europe. Well, when we came from Europe, and this, if you go read the Martin versus Waddell case, they made references to, here, you know, when we had this tea party in the Boston Harbor, you know, there was a reason for that. We rejected a lot of what we came here to get away from. And they go on to cite a whole lot of things, you know, like all the religious, you know, things that were going on at the time. And so the people would say, well, Randy, come on, man, that was 250 years ago. You get with the times. Well, we have a body of law in this country that has established you, I, our listeners, our viewers, as all beneficiaries of the wildlife trust in their state.
Yeah.
And when you have groups that now are effective enough and afraid enough of that language and that principle that they can convince an entire state legislature or the majority of a state legislature and a governor to run and be afraid of that kind of language, that principle that has built our wildlife system since 1842, that should get everybody's antenna vibrating. Even though, as you read it, if you don't understand all the importance and the foundational building block of the public trust doctrine, you might read this and say, yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, I do like that Georgia is making affirmative statements about the right for hunting and fishing.
Yeah.
But as you read the attorneys on both sides of this, or at least on one side, if they're like, if this passes, who knows where this goes? Because we have land claims where people can claim to own the fishing for miles and miles of rivers in Georgia.
Yeah. No, it could definitely be to the detriment of public fishermen, for sure.
Yeah.
And hunters as well.
Right.
And yeah, it's not by accident that we have one of the most, you know, cherished wildlife systems in the world.
Yeah. Like,
the United States is pretty unique, and it's pretty amazing, in my opinion, of what we're able to do. The fact that we can go out and a regular guy can hunt and fish and take public resources is pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I'll leave people with this word of warning or caution. There are groups in your state legislature who are out there trying to kick away the foundation that relies on the public trust doctrine. There are groups now that have specifically said, we can build a movement against the public trust doctrine. And it's not just in Georgia. This just happens to be a place where it actually made it to legislation.
Yeah.
But that you read about it all the times in some of these think tanks. They are out there trying to dismantle or at least neuter the public trust doctrine. And that's what our wildlife system is based on.
Well, thanks for the history lesson and the cautionary tale.
Yeah. Cool stuff. Interesting to see it coming from the Southeast.
Yeah. Trying to learn something new for sure. And but it, like we said, it applies to every state. So, yeah. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.